Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody is going to have a fantastic weekend. Happy Friday to everybody. It's going to be a big weekend at the box office. We have Super Mario still cleaning up at the box office. We have Guy Ritchie's The Covenant that's going to be released. And, of course, we have the horror film Evil Dead Rises. So that's a lot of good stuff coming out. And then, of course, we're only 2 weeks away, guys. We're only 2 weeks away from Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Unbelievable. So, anyways, we got a lot to get to. So let's just jump right in. So anybody that read the tease or looking at it, there's a lot of Marvel stuff going on, a lot of Disney stuff. So we'll get to some of that in a little bit. But I want to start out with another breaking story. So we're going to start with Disney real quick. So one thing that had been really hurting Disney for a while, and it kind of came out at the same time, was that we had, within a 48-hour period, we had two big stories come out. One of them we'll get to in a couple minutes, but I want to talk about the first one real quick, and that's Victoria Alonso. So anybody who's not familiar with Victoria Alonso, she was the very high up in the Marvel hierarchy. She answered to Kevin Feige, and she dealt with post-production. So post-production, of course, anybody who's not familiar with that, is visual effects. So, of course, you know, Disney is in these Marvel movies are very, very, very heavy, especially like Guardians of the Galaxy, which we were just talking about, or any of these other, you know, Captain Marvel, are very heavy on special effects. And when that happens, you can tell immediately. So there had been a lot of backlash about the visual effects artists and everything else. Well, anyways, a couple weeks ago, okay, Victoria Alonso actually got let go after about 17 years. And you go, wow, that's a long time. It is a long time. She was with Marvel when this whole MCU started. I mean, she was on the original Iron Man, Guardians, so on. I mean, plenty of other films. She gets let go. It was a Monday. They said, you know, she's done. And everybody's like, what happened? It was a complete shocker to everybody. Well, it came out that she was working on another film. Okay, it was another film that was actually nominated for the Academy Awards in the foreign language film. And that was Argentina in 1985. Now, she is from Latin America. So she always wanted to do a story that was about her heritage. That being said, okay, there was a lot, it was a to-do about it, okay? Disney said their thing, and Victoria had said her thing. And she didn't like what ended up happening, so she ended up suing Disney for a lot of money. Anyways, just yesterday, okay, Disney settled. And so this comes from Deadline, and it says, Disney settles with former Marvel exec Victoria Alonso over sudden firing. Disney has settled with former Marvel Studios VFX chief Victoria Alonso after pink slipping her last month. While details between Alonso and Disney are confidential, there was a multi-million dollar financial compensation we hear. The deal between the parties was reached in the past few days. Alonso was represented by Gal Whale, Wink, Howard, and Shapiro LLP in the dispute, which went public on March 24th. The office of Alonso's attorney, Patrick Glaser, had no comment on the settlement when contacted by Deadline. Disney did not return our request for comment either. Alonso was abruptly shown the door on March 17th after a 17-year run at Marvel. Her departure came in the wake of being nominated for the International Film Feature Film 1985. Her most recent film at Marvel was... Her most recent title at Marvel was President, Physical, and Post-Production VFX and Animation Production. She had had a history at the studio of being a consistently outspoken champion of diversity and entertainment. Reports at the time said Alonso was let go from Disney for working outside the confines of her employment contract, which did not permit her to be involved with non-Disney projects such as Argentina in 1985. Heavyweight litigator, a Hollywood litigator, Glazer, responded to that comment at the time, saying, quote, "The idea that Victoria was fired over a handful of press interviews related to a personal passion project about human rights and democracy that was nominated for an Oscar and which she got Disney's blessing to work on is absolutely ridiculous. Victoria, a gay Latino, who had the courage to criticize Disney, was silenced. Then she was terminated when she refused something she believed was reprehensible. Disney and Marvel made a really poor decision that will have serious consequences. There is a lot more to this story, and Victoria will be telling it shortly, in one form or another." Disney retorted on March 24th. This was their statement. "It's unfortunate that Victoria is sharing a narrative that leaves out several key factors concerning her departure, including an indisputable breach of contract and direct violation of company policy. We will continue to wish her the best for the future and thank her for her numerous contributions to the studio." Alonso joined Marvel in 2006 as chief of visual effects and post-production, was involved in launch of 2008's Iron Man as a co-producer, counting additional co-credits on Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America the First Avenger, before being elevated to EP on Avengers. And then she served as an EP on movies and Disney series, most recently as Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, Thor: Love and Thunder, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, in addition to TV fanfare, Loki, Miss Marvel, and the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. Okay, let's talk about this. So I believe that this is done for a couple of reasons. Okay. Now, by the way, number one, she was completely right. I'm just going to come out and say that outright. She was completely right in the situation. Disney was wrong. That all being said, Disney is doing this for a couple of reasons. Number one, they still have the Jonathan Majors thing, which is we'll get to in a couple of minutes, which is getting worse and worse for Disney. Number two, you have a huge, huge film in Guardians Volume 3 coming out, okay? And I think that they did not want this to be a distraction. Because don't forget, James Gunn is over at DC now. And the thing is that he did not want to have to be fielding questions about either, you know, what it's like at DC, working at DC, or the Victoria Alonso, because they did work in tandem together. It was the right thing to do for Disney to settle. They were completely wrong here. And I feel like she won. So there's a couple questions to be asked here. Number one, what happens now, right? Because we are in a point, okay, we're just starting the brand new phase in Ant-Man, okay? Whether you liked it or didn't like it, that's completely, you know, subjective. That being said, we don't have that post filled. So how is Disney going to go about doing this, okay? Are they going to hire somebody in the interim? Do they have a short list? If they do, who's on the short list? And how fast are they going to get this done? Okay, that's first. Second of all, there's something to be said, too, about the last four projects, okay, for Disney. They were all front-loaded, of course. So, you know, they averaged $156 million, but that wasn't the big thing. It's the visual effects. Now, you have to wonder, how are the visual effects, if the visual effects are going to get better, okay? Because people had problems, not only with narratively with Thor, Love, and Thunder, but with the visual effects. Or maybe with Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Or it was Ant-Man. They weren't up to snuff of the earlier MCU films. So how is that going to help or detract? Number three, what happens? So when she was working on Argentina in 1985, and we had these visual effects artists come out and say, well, they're working us, grinding us, you know, doing whatever. Was that a result of that? Okay, or was that just her having too much on her plate? Because if we go back to the article, okay, she was working on Loki. She was working on Miss Marvel. She was working on Ant-Man and Quantumania. She was working on all these projects. So was it her taking too much on and then having to crunch? Or was it just she couldn't handle it? The other thing, too, is the fact that she would have gotten fired because she was working on another project that wasn't Disney related. Now, listen, I understand they have to hire, you know, I mean, they have NDAs or non-disclosure agreements. But to tell me that she basically couldn't work on another project that was near and dear to her heart, I find that difficult to believe. Very difficult to believe. And that being said, she fought back. And she won. And Disney is now, you know, they have to pay up. And, I mean, we can always, we'll talk about this in a couple minutes, but don't forget about the Scarlett Johansson case. Okay? Bob Chapek basically raked her into the coals, and it was character assassination. And for breach of contract and everything else. And they ended up having to settle with Scarlett Johansson, too. So this is, and the final thing I'll say is this. Where does she go from here? She's going to take a 6-month, 8-month sabbatical. We all know that. But there's a little project, you know, opening, a little opening up, thing opening up in D.C. And it's the DCU. Plus, she's worked with James Gunn before. I wouldn't be shocked or surprised in 6-8 months' time if we're hearing about even sooner than that. Because you know she doesn't want to rest on her laurels. Okay, she's going to get a lot of money from Disney. We know that. Her tax bracket's going to go up. But I wouldn't be shocked if she went over to Warner Brothers. I'm just saying it's a possibility. It's kind of like, I mean, I'm a baseball fan, so put it to you like this. I'm a big Boston Red Sox fan. It's kind of like, you know, a player going from Boston Red Sox to the New York Yankees. It's the dreaded, you know, traitor, you know, type, not traitor, but the dreaded team, or as somebody called it once, the evil empire. But I mean, the point is that she's made her bones at Disney. James Gunn could absolutely help her, you know, get this thing up and running. And they're just starting. Can you imagine in a couple years, in 2025, if you're sitting in the theater and if you see Victoria Alonso's name come up in the credits, that would be a huge, huge get. So a lot of questions to be asked. But yeah, I think this was the right thing for Disney to do because they did not want this to basically overshadow Guardians 3. Because this is coming out in 2 weeks, like I said, and it's going to make a lot of money. And James Gunn does not want to have to be fielding questions about this. So, because he has worked with her before. So, I would, like I said, don't be shocked in 6 months' time. Maybe the end of the summer. Who knows? You know, anyways. I think that's a fascinating thing. And good for her. Good for her. She fought back and she won. And that just shows you something. So, anyways, what do you guys think? How much do you think Disney gave her? I mean, obviously, we'll never know, but how much, you know, they said, multi-million dollar settlement. So how much do you think they gave Victoria Alonso? Was it a good amount of money? Do you think she was right? Do you think Disney was right? Leave your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay. So we go from one Disney story to the other one, okay? So as we know, Jonathan Majors, right around the same time, was arrested. He had charges allegedly of assault and battery and a couple of other things. So Jonathan Majors is now, there's another update about this. And it's not looking good for this guy. You know, and I will... You know, yesterday I came out and did a story about this, and I still believe this. We have to reserve our judgment. We have to wait until all the evidence is presented. We have to wait until what is going to happen is going to happen. Okay? Social media, there are a lot of things swirling around this. Okay? First and foremost, we have social media. We live in a 24-hour news cycle, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week news cycle. And that being said, Anything that is breaking, everybody wants the first scoop at it. Even if it's wrong, because they can always retract it later. When the very first story broke, it was on TMZ. And I waited until the trades came in. Because I'll be honest, I don't really trust TMZ as a reliable source. That being said, the trades picked it up and what have you. We are now a couple of weeks out of this, okay? And so we just got an update yesterday, and there is more bad news for Jonathan Majors about this. So this comes from Variety, and it says that Jonathan Majors' issues worsen as more alleged abuse victims cooperate with the DA's office. As Jonathan Majors prepares for a May 8th court appearance on domestic violence charges, his PR problems are about to get bigger. Sources familiar with the matter tell Variety that multiple alleged abuse victims have come forward following his March arrests and are cooperating with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. The prospect of more women waiting in the wings will mark a dramatic turn in the case and come on the heels of Majors' publicist and management firm dropping him and cutting ties with the embattled actor earlier this week. The DA declined comment. Jonathan Majors is innocent and has not abused anybody. We have provided irrefutable evidence to the district attorney that the charges are false. We are convinced and confident that he will be fully exonerated, says Majors' attorney in a statement. The Creed 3 star was arrested on March 25th in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan on charges of strangulation, assault, and harassment. At the time, an NYPD spokesperson said in a statement that a 30-year-old woman told police she had been assaulted by Majors, 33, and that she, quote, sustained minor injuries to her head and neck and was removed to an area hospital in stable condition, end quote. But Majors' lawyer mounted an immediate and aggressive response, insisting that the actor, quote, is probably the victim of an altercation with a woman he knows, end quote, and suggests that the woman was having a, quote, emotional crisis, end quote. A source familiar with the chronological events says the attorney released a statement while he was still behind bars. Chauncey's husband, who is the lawyer for Majors, Andrew Bork, is serving Majors' crisis publicist and doubled down on the narrative that Majors was a victim when he released a series of text messages on March 30th that were intended to be exonerating. In the text exchange, which has not been independently verified, the woman wrote to Majors, quote, I told him it was my fault for trying to grab your phone, end quote. And she stressed that she told police, quote, this was not an attack, end quote. The woman allegedly wrote, quote, please let me know you're okay when you get this. They assured me you won't be charged. They said they had to arrest you as protocol. And when they saw the injuries on me, they knew we had a fight. I'm so angry that they did this. And I'm sorry that you're in this position. We'll make sure nothing happens to you. I love you, end quote. A few hours later, the woman allegedly wrote, quote, I know you have the best team and there's nothing to worry about. I just want you to know that I'm doing all I can on my end. I also said to tell the judge that the origin of the 911 call was for me collapsing and passing out, and you're worried as my partner due to the communication prior, end quote. But for many who were in the business, the text messages had the opposite effect, raising more questions than they answers, namely why the woman had lost consciousness. It's like a really bad Lifetime movie. Basically, it looked like the text messages of an abused, textbook abused woman, said one person who was working Majors on an upcoming project. In recent events, Majors had become one of the most famous and promising Hollywood stars, with a series of high-profile and lucrative roles on the horizon. Now all eyes are on him with the MCU, where he's poised to play Kang in the Kang Dynasty. Majors is still attached to the film, which is slated to be released on March 2nd, 2025, and is poised for a $20 million payday, including back-end compensation. He was also signed to do Avengers Secret Wars, which is slated to debut in 2026. Disney is monitoring the fast-moving situation, and it has time to deliberate. The megastar, the mega-budget tentpole Avengers Kang Dynasty movie, is scheduled to begin production in the spring of next year. Disney is already deep in business with Majors, given that the specialty label Searchlight acquired the actor's critically lauded magazine Dreams, in which he played a troubled bodybuilder at the Sundance Film Festival, which was prepared to mount a robust Best Actors Award campaign later this year when it's released on November 8th. Majors also shot the second season of Disney Plus' Loki, which is expected to launch on the streaming platform mid of 2023. I'm not gonna finish the article because it's too much. It's too long. But what I will say is this: let's talk about this real quick. Number one, I think that let's get something straight here. He's in deep trouble. Okay. Number two, we can all look at the physique here. Okay. He's huge. This isn't CGI, guys. If you've seen Creed 3, okay, and you know of, you know, one of the scenes where he's, you know, doing bench pressing and everything else, he's jacked. I'll say this much. If he's guilty, and that is a big if, I'm saying that right now because that's a necessary thing. If he is guilty, he deserves everything he gets. Okay. That being said, that we have other people coming out, other women coming out, it's not looking good. Okay. The other thing too is, and I have to reiterate this, the fact that, you know, the woman can do absolutely nothing here. Let's call a spade a spade. Okay. She can do absolutely nothing. And the other thing I have to say is this. Every single 911 call, every single 911 call across this country, even that's going on right now as I'm streaming, is recorded for purposes of if they need to go back and hear something or find out something, they can. So if he did call 911, I'd like to hear the call. Now, according to, you know, some people, there's video evidence in the cab. That's, you know, yet to be determined. Excuse me, guys, real quick. So getting back to what I was saying, though, I think the fact is that, so let's go to Metal's comment real quick. It hurts to see this happening to him. Hopefully it gets worked out. Yeah, no, I hope so, too. I do hope so, because I feel like it's a necessary thing that needs to get worked out. So let's go back and recap real quick. Number one, if they have a 911 call, I think they need to come out and play it. Okay. They need to play the phone call. Plain and simple. Okay. I think they need to play the phone call and they need to tell us what's going on. Number two, okay, the fact is that just the more women that come out and say something, I mean, look, I was just watching Spotlight last night, okay, the 2015 Best Picture winner. And it's a completely different thing. What I'm going to get at is this. The more people that came out, the harder and harder it was to deny. They need to do something very, very quickly. If there is video evidence of this in the cab, they need to come out and say that. Okay, they can't just, you know, say, oh, well, we have video evidence, and then don't show anything. Okay. You have the 911 call. Let's see what it says. Now, we're definitely going to get this in that hearing, I believe it was May 8th. Yeah, May 8th. So we're only going to have to wait a couple more weeks. So I hope, to your point, Metal, I hope this works out. I really do. But this is another, there's another question here. So it's said in the piece that Disney was still, he was still attached to Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars. What happens if on May 8th he's held without bond? Because my guess is right now he's ROR, or on his own recognizance, released on his own recognizance. You haven't heard a peep from Majors. Because this team is basically saying, look, we need to do damage control right now. What happens? How fast is it? He's supposed to be in about half of the episodes of Loki. Where do they go? They've always had stars, okay, that have had problems, okay, but they've been minor problems, or they've been minor stars. So they can say, okay, you don't need to be in the next movie then. They can't do that with him. He is the big bad, right? I mean, that shot on the right there is of Kang. He is supposed to be the big bad of Phase 5 and Phase 6. What do? How fast do you recast? They're in a real, real problem right now. And you got to look at it like this, too. Think about this. What happens moving forward, right? What happens if this happens? What happens if this happens? What happens if another star comes out, okay? And this happens to another. I'm not saying to those allegations. I'm talking about if another star comes out and says something on social media that's not so good, you know? There's a lot of questions to be answered here. To your point, Metal, I hope that puts this back up. I hope it's sad to hurt. It hurts to see this happening. I hope it gets worked out, and I do too. I do too, because it does have to get worked out. And the longer that this goes on, the longer there's going to be questions about it. And when do you put Loki Season 2 out? That's another whole thing. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this? What would you do if you're Kevin Feige and Marvel? What would you do if you're Disney and Bob Iger? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we move from Disney and feature films to streaming. So Netflix has been in the news for the past, 48, 72 hours because they just had an earnings call and they just talked about when their password sharing is going to start and different price points and everything else. So what ends up happening is Netflix is still in that position where if you go on Netflix, there's a lot of content on there, and it's a lot of licensed content. And I just did a story the other day about how Warner Brothers and Paramount are fighting over the streaming rights of South Park. So let's talk about Netflix, because Netflix was, and I say was because I don't think they are anymore, was the leader for streaming for about 20 years. When you had other players start to come in, okay, like a Apple, like an Amazon, like a, you know, Paramount Plus, like a Disney Plus, all this, people started to go away. And they started to go to all these other streaming services. Well, there is an article out on the Wrap, and it's a Wrap Pro, okay, that talks about their licensings. So this is on according to the Wrap, okay? And it says, Netflix remains dependent on licensed shows like Breaking Bad, okay? Despite Netflix's considerable investment in creating original content, a majority of most of its popular shows remain licensed from outside networks. Between the last quarter of 2021 and the first quarter of 2023, original shows shares of Netflix catalog grew from 51% to 61%. During the same period, the demand shares of original content among the top 25 shows in the platform decreased by 25% in the first quarter of 2023, the lowest it has been in recent years, according to Parrot Analytics data, which takes into account consumer resources, streaming, downloads, social media, and among other engagement. Of the top 25 most popular shows in the platform in the first quarter, only 7 were Netflix originals. That's fascinating. Okay. So for context, 23 of the top 25 series available on HBO Max were HBO Max or Max originals. Several of the Netflix popular originals on that list are not owned in-house by the streamer or the start of did not start on Netflix, like You, Cobra Kai, and Lucifer, and could revert back to the original owner, leaving a hole in Netflix's library. When looking at the overall demand for Netflix's licensed content, which makes up about half of the total demand of the catalog in the first quarter of 2023, it shows that the premiered on the CW had the highest stake at 11.4. So the network provided some key shows from the DC universe to Netflix, like The Flash, the second most in-demand show on Netflix at the time that quarter, DC's Legend of Tomorrow and Arrow. Nickelodeon, which accounted for the second largest share, underscores the importance of the animation portion of the Netflix catalog. Shows like Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles still feature among the top 25 in-demand shows of the catalog. Though AMC licensed just a handful of original shows to Netflix, these series have huge impacts and collectively account for about 6.8% of the demand for licensed content of the service. That's mainly due to the popularity of titles like The Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, and Better Call Saul, all of which were among the top 10 in-demand shows on Netflix in the period looked at. Netflix reliance on licensed content may pose a problem for the streamers' efforts to increase free cash flow in the mediums and long term. For example, if Sony, the owner of the licensing right to two of their shows from the Breaking Bad franchise, determines that these shows are keep high chum risks on Netflix, it might seem to negotiate higher significant licensing fees, which essentially would mean that they couldn't afford them. Now, it says here that I just want to, you know, because they did talk about Parrot. Parrot Analytics is the industry leader in global audience demand measurement. The company measures global demand and supply for entertainment, capturing over 2 billion audience expressions, demand for content and talent in over 100 languages across all platforms in 200 countries. Parrot Analytics Partners uses this knowledge to help better understand global supply and demand across all platforms to value content and talent, drive better production, distribution, acquisition, and marketing decisions, as well as increase direct-to-consumer growth and retention. So let's talk about this real quick, because this is all important stuff. So the fact is that Netflix is hurting for their own stuff, okay? That's what it comes down to. If we look at this chart here, okay, three out of every four shows are licensed. If we go back 2 years, okay, it's 3.5. So 35% of their stuff was original. And 65% of it was licensed. If we go back to 2022, okay, it was 3 out of every 4 shows, okay? So that was the first quarter. In the second quarter, it was almost a 7-to-3 ratio. In the third quarter, it was 6.5-to-3.5. In Q4 of last year, okay, it was 3-to-1. And now it's still in a 3-to-1 thing. Now, this chart here will show you exactly which networks they get their stuff from. So, for example, okay, you have everybody else, which makes 6 out of 10. Okay, so as it explained, 3 of the major shows on the platform are from CW. Okay, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, and something else. They have Nickelodeon, which makes up their kids and animation portion. AMC, okay, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, okay. NBC, which could be, you know, let's say ER, Friends, whatever. Okay, CBS, that's more for reality television, okay. You're talking about Survivor, you're talking about, you know, blanking, The Amazing Race, but that's also shows like Big Bang Theory and everything else, okay? And then you have 4% here from TV Tokyo, which may be something like Squid Games. The fact is that they don't have a lot of good quality standalone content anymore, and that's a serious problem. Now, yes, they do have their own shows like Cobra Kai and You and everything else. But the way they release it, okay, and this goes back all the way back to their own business model, they release everything at once. This is why Disney Plus, okay, is so incredibly important. because not only do they have their whole library, I'm talking about Star Wars, I'm talking about Marvel, I'm talking about, you know, National Geographic stuff, I'm talking about all their Disney classics, okay? They can put it all in one platform, okay? That being said, when you go, and let's go back to this other chart for a minute, when you're having 3 out of every 4 shows on your platform, be licensed out. So a Better Call Saul, a Breaking Bad, a Friends, an ER, whatever it is, you're paying millions and millions and millions of dollars for this, okay? That's a problem, especially when you're trying to make original content like The Irishman, like, you know, other things. And this is, I mean, it goes back to 2 things, really. Number one, their business model. Their business model is they drop everything at once. Everything. So I could, Cobra Kai, for example, let's pick a show. I could sit down and binge the whole whole season of that in a weekend. And I'm done. It's that simple. Instead of doing what Disney Plus does and releasing it week by week by week, okay, which gets the fervor going, which gets the speculation going, what's going to happen, everything else. That's the first thing. The second thing is they're not releasing any, and the CEO just came out the other day and said theatrical is not our model. Well, here's the problem. When you have a movie like Glass Onion, okay, and it makes $16 million in 1 week, and the whole premise is that we want to get subscribers, and they don't get subscribers, look, you've lost money. Especially when Amazon and Apple have already accounted, and they've already come out and said, listen, guys, we're going to spend $1 billion on theatrical in the next year. Oh, and by the way, our new feature, Air, okay, is going to be in theaters, which, by the way, has made $60 million in the theater. The film costs $90 million to make. We're not even talking about VOD sales. Once this hits, it's going to blow up. So, look, eventually, this is why Netflix is in trouble. They won't say it. Yeah, they may have gained 2 million subscribers over this last quarter, but they won't say it. Behind closed doors, they've got to be hurting. I mean, when you're laying off people and everything else, cutbacks, I have no sympathy. When you have 6 out of every 10 shows, okay, you know, like, when you have 40% of your content made up by other people, and then you go out and get it, of course you're going to charge a premium, especially if it's a good show, like a Breaking Bad, for example, or a Better Call Saul, or an older thing like Friends or ER. If NBC ever wanted to get Friends back, and I don't know if it's on Peacock or not now, but if they ever wanted to, they're in serious trouble. Serious trouble. So Netflix has to figure out what they want to do. Okay? Do they, I know what the CEO said, but do they keep their stuff in longer? Do they put some of the original content that they have in theaters? For example, I don't know, the next season of whatever their major, you know, I don't know. Well, I'm just going to pick a show. I don't know if this is over or not. But let's say the Queen's Gambit. Let's say they 2 nights only or a weekend. Call it Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They go to, you know, AMC and Regal, say, look, we want to put our stuff in theaters for a weekend. Just 1 weekend, okay? Or 1 week. Call 1 week. And then do that. That way they're able to make more money. Now, it's a television show. I understand that. But you're not... The only way Netflix makes money is by subscribers and ad revenue. That's it. So, and most people do not want to deal with commercials because they're watching television already and there's too many commercials on TV as it is. Okay? You have a movie like, I don't know, let's say Empire Strikes Back, which, by the way, we're going to be doing for May, our perfect movie for May. That'll be coming out May 4th. But, and I did this once, just as a, for fun. Okay? I took the film, which I own, okay, or watched on streaming. That's what I was watched on Disney Plus. So I took the film, and then I did it right to the exact point of where it was on television. And I watched the film on Disney Plus. Now, do you know when I was done watching the film on Disney Plus? It was only 2/3 of the way through. That tells you how many ads. I think it's right around 2 hours and change. But that is not a 3-hour movie. Because every 8 minutes, they have to stop for advertisements. Whereas in streaming, you know, there's no problem. They have a problem, and they have to fix it. And Netflix is in serious, serious trouble. Anyways, guys, what do you guys think about this? Which shows do you watch on Netflix that you would be upset if they went away? Would you cancel Netflix if they couldn't afford your favorite show anymore? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay. So we have one last story, and I wanted to save the biggest one for last. Another Disney story, another Marvel story. They're just in the business all the way around. So this basically says that Scarlett Johansson, she's done with Marvel. And she is done playing Black Widow. And she has been in quite a few movies. Of course, speaking of Disney, speaking of lawsuits, speaking of everything else, she was in the much embroiled lawsuit from Disney a couple years ago for Black Widow. And by the way, she won that lawsuit, as she should have. And she deserved it. And Bob Chapek tried to pull a fast one on her. And that was that. Nonetheless, we waited way too long to see a Black Widow movie. We did. And that was a fact. It should have come much, much sooner than it did. That being said, she's done with Disney. She's done with Disney. She's done with Marvel. And she's done with the whole shebang. So this comes from The Hollywood Reporter. And she says that she's done with Marvel films. And there was not... Gwyneth Paltrow, however, does not rule out a return. Which, you know, of course, she has not been in a Marvel film since, really, Endgame. Endgame was the last film that she was really in. So, here's what it says this. The time of starring in Marvel films has come to an end for Scarlett Johansson. During an interview with Gwyneth Paltrow on the Goop podcast, the two actresses reflected on their time starring in Marvel films and shared whether they'd return to the MCU in the future. Paltrow starred in the 2008 Iron Man as Pepper Potts and went on to reprise her role in the Iron Man sequels and Avengers films, while Johansson debuted in Black Widow in Iron Man 2, later on starring in the Avengers film as well as the 2021 Black Widow. Doing Avengers was so much fun. I was like 26 years old. I was single. It was fun, Johansson recalled starring in the first film, describing it as a, quote, adult summer camp, end quote. Paltrow shared the same sentiments, calling it, quote, fun to be in something that resonated so deeply with people culturally, end quote. However, when Paltrow asked whether Johansson was done with Marvel, the actress confirmed the, quote, chapter, end quote, has come to an end. I'm done, she says. Chapter is over. I kind of did all that I wanted to do. Also, coming back and playing a character again and again like that over a decade of time is such a unique experience. When Paltrow credited Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige for being, quote, good at all that, end quote, Johansson agreed. He's such a lover of cinema and storytelling. He really is a fan, she says. When Johansson asked whether Paltrow herself was done with Marvel films, Paltrow said she couldn't rule out a return given her character never died. I mean, I think so. I didn't die, so they could always ask me to come back, Paltrow said. I think you might come back at some point, Johansson told Paltrow. To which Paltrow quipped, really? A 64-year-old Pepper Potts? How great. 100% that's happening. I could see it. They're never going to let you go. Break out that wig, baby, Johansson added. Johansson's Black Widow died in 2019's Endgame, but has returned in the standalone prequel Black Widow. The release of Black Widow was delayed amidst the pandemic, when the film was simultaneously released in theaters and on Disney Plus, the actress filed a lawsuit claiming the film had been guaranteed an exclusive theatrical release when she signed her deal, and alleged that the contract was breached when the film was released on the streaming service. The complaint also stated that Disney had made no attempt to redo her deal. At the time, Disney countered that Johansson was paid $20 million for the film, which she should have. Johansson and Disney eventually settled the breach of contract lawsuit over her pay. I am happy to have that resolved, have resolved my differences with Disney, Johansson said in a statement at the time. I'm incredibly proud of the work we've done over the years and have greatly enjoyed my creative relationship with the team. I look forward to continuing our collaboration and for years to come in the future. Okay, let's talk about this real quick because it's important to, it is good to see that she's finally done. She's walking away on her own terms. If Paltrow comes back, if Gwyneth comes back, then she comes back. I think she's done too. She just doesn't want to say it. I think that being said, we have female stars right now in the MCU, in Ms. Marvel, okay, in Captain Marvel, and a bunch of other, you know, strong women characters that I think would really do well and is going to do well. That being said, I think that, you know, I personally, I'm glad that, you know, Scarlett Johansson actually got what she deserved. She should have gotten $20 million for Black Widow, as she did. Fact is, she shouldn't have had to go through that lawsuit. Had Disney just paid her, it seems to me, and I could be wrong about this, but it seems to me Disney is very, very stubborn. They never like to admit when they're wrong. And it always costs them more money. Whether it's the Victoria Alonso thing we were talking about at the top of the show, or the Scarlett Johansson, whatever it is. And it blows my mind, instead of getting out in front of it, to just say, hey, look, we'll pay you. Sorry that we had the inconvenience. But when you have Bob Chapek, and I'm not going to go on a tangent about it, but he was an idiot. He was an absolute idiot. And he deserved to get fired, and they deserve to pay. That all being said, I love Black Widow. I think, if I'm being honest, I think her being a redhead for me, I think that's her best. That's her best. I think this shot on the left here, I love this. I love her as a redhead. Love her as a redhead. Even in this other shot here in the white, I love her as a redhead. Blonde? Okay. The Avengers shot is fantastic too, so, but not so much as a blonde. Anyways, that's just me being me. But I think that, you know, it was good to have a run. We have more female stars. I don't think Gwyneth is going to come back. That's just me, you know, speculating, but I can't see her coming back. But she had a great run and she made a lot of money doing it too. So, I mean, that's the other thing, too. So she was in quite, she was almost in, what, she was in 6, 7, 8 films? So, I mean, I would love to know, we'll never find out. But her getting paid for, I mean, for the 2 scenes she was in, or 3 scenes she was in Endgame for, I'm sure she got a very good paycheck for. And so, anyways. But yeah, so Scarlett Johansson is done. And we have other stars, so let's celebrate them too. But also, let's celebrate the brave women there that actually did something and really started the MCU, when you think about it. Because at that time, Gwyneth was in the very first Iron Man movie, in 08, okay? And, you know, we see Black Widow come along a couple years later. So, I mean, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is the only one that really clean up for that, but that's another thing for another time. Anyways, what do you guys think? Which Black Widow did you particularly like? Was it the one in Endgame? Was it the one in Winter Soldier? Was it the one in the Avengers? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so that's all we have for today. Couple of things I want to get to right off the top. So as I keep saying every single day, but I want to reiterate it, I am going to be doing a Mission Impossible rewatch for the whole month of June and July leading up to July. I have the notes right over there. I am going to be doing the stream this weekend. So either tomorrow or Sunday, I'll tweet that out. And by the way, if you want to follow me on Twitter, all you got to do, that is my Twitter handle. So you can follow me there. I'm always on Twitter looking at that stuff, talking about movies, all that good stuff. Anyways, so it's going to be one a week. So starting June 2nd. Next week, we have a huge week. We have not only the shows, but there's two big movies coming out. One of them is, well, I won't say coming out. One is going to be the five-year anniversary of Avengers Infinity War. Okay? I can't believe that's turning five already. And then, okay, we will be having a 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi, which is going to be in theaters, which I am going to go see, and I am going to do a video on. So stay tuned for that. If you guys want to actually support me, head on over to patreon.com. There's two different levels there. One is $5, and that you'll be able to get Mob Mondays. And the other one is $10, and you'll be able to get Rewatch Wednesdays. There will be monthly videos that only is going to be seen on Patreon, and you can't find anywhere else. If you want to do something just a little bit less, hit that join button where you see it, and it's $2.99 a month, and that will help me out greatly. And that's it. That being said, so everybody have a great weekend, and do the three things you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great weekend. And I will see you guys back here on Monday. I'm David Steele, and you've been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.